from deep inside your radio.
Just like the old days, ladies and gentlemen, taking a cue, the pointed finger cue from radio's past is the way this broadcast started today. And it's only going to get older from there, I think. But from New Orleans, Louisiana, one more time, hello. And this is a, I was walking over here. This is a studio to which I can actually be a pedestrian, which is one of its charms. I think it is its only charm. But, and you, walking over here, I'm reminded of one of the many odd and wonderful things about New Orleans, which is this is a city that you still can hear train whistles in. Now, I was in Atlanta this week on this road thing, and there was a train whistle within earshot of the hotel I was staying at. But oddly enough, the train whistle you hear in New Orleans, and you not only hear train whistles here, you hear boat whistles. So you hear this dialogue between and not to be exact about it. But the train whistle we heard in Atlanta, we being me and a friend, me and my wife, okay? Knock it off. Oddly enough, was minor key. And the train whistle you hear in New Orleans is major key with a sixth on it. So it's just a friendlier, kind of hipper train whistle. Ladies and gentlemen, the Los Angeles Times is ending its printed daily national edition. I don't know if you knew that there was such a thing. This is the edition that they print so that people in Congress and in Washington can actually know that there is such a thing as the Los Angeles Times. Los Angeles Times is ending its printed daily national edition at the end of the year. It says the Internet and other electronic distribution channels, I don't know what those would be, maybe the CIA, have made the paper copy of the Los Angeles Times irrelevant. So they're halfway to self-knowledge. And federal regulators have recently fined two biotech companies, including one based in Ohio, for improperly handling genetically modified crops. Don't be scared. This is fine. Don't worry about this. Regulators said they are not investigating the University of California, Davis, for its role in unknowingly shipping genetically engineered tomato seeds around the world. Good night. Thank you. The U.S. Department of Agriculture fined Seminis, or Seminis, I guess it would be, looking at the way it's spelled, of Oxnard, California, for shipping unlabeled genetically engineered seeds to UC Davis, which operates one of the world's top tomato seed banks. Then they mistakenly distributed the modified tomato seeds to scientists who ordered conventionally bred seeds. They wouldn't check, you know, because it's a university that specializes in agriculture. So the genie is now officially out of the bottle, and a $2,500 fine has been assessed. Sleep well. Hello, welcome to the show.
A bottle of gin, you know I feel all right. rest your merry gentlemen, let nothing you dismay. For Jesus Christ, our Savior, was born on Christmas Day to save us all from Satan's power when we are gone astray. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy. Shepherds at those tidings rejoice much in their mind, and left their flocks a-feeding in tempest, storm, and wind, and went to Bethlehem straightway this blessed babe to find. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy. Oh, yeah. 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 Now to the Lord sing praises, are you within this place, and with true love and brotherhood each other now embrace. This holy tide of Christmas, all Father's dirty face. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy. God rest you merry gentlemen, let nothing you dismay. Remember that our Savior was born on Christmas Day.
From the blue bottom of a very red state, from New Orleans, Louisiana, from the French Quarter therein, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of Le Show. From the buried lead department, ladies and gentlemen, this is where we point out that maybe the most newsworthy part of a news story is not where it should be, in the first paragraph. It's just a little bit of, you know, dogmatism on my part, I guess. I'm just an old-fashioned kind of a cuss. Excuse me. Dateline Amsterdam. A hospital in the Netherlands, the first nation to permit euthanasia, recently proposed guidelines for mercy killings of terminally ill newborns, and then made a startling revelation it has already begun carrying out such procedures which involve administering a lethal dose of sedatives. That's the lead. Now, that's newsworthy, I guess. The announcement by Groningen Academic Hospital came amid a growing discussion in Holland on whether to legalize euthanasia on people incapable of deciding for themselves whether they want to end their lives. 3 years ago, the Dutch Parliament made it legal for doctors to inject a sedative and lethal dose of muscle relaxant at the request of adult patients suffering great pain with no hope of relief. And we go further. Roman Catholic organizations in the Vatican have reacted with outrage to the announcement. The slippery slope in the Netherlands has descended already into a vertical cliff, said a prominent California-based critic to the Associated Press. Child euthanasia remains illegal everywhere, says the head of Groningen Children's Clinic, and now we're heading towards the lead. As things are, people are doing this secretly, and that's wrong. In the Netherlands, we want to expose everything to let everything be subjected to vetting. According to the Dutch Justice Ministry, 4 cases of child euthanasia were reported to prosecutors in 2003, 2 were reported in 2002, 7 in 2001, and 5 in 2000. Belgium has also legalized euthanasia. That's old Europe. That's what they do. Now, way down here at the bottom, way down here, put your miner's light on, because here it comes. Quote, however, experts acknowledge that doctors euthanize routinely in the United States, but that the practice is hidden. Quote, measures that might marginally extend a child's life by minutes or hours or days or weeks are stopped. This happens routinely, namely, every day, says Lance Stell, professor of medical ethics at Davidson College in Davidson, North Carolina. Everybody knows that it happens, he says, but there's a lot of hypocrisy. Instead, people talk about things they're not going to do. Unquote. And then he adds, probably the most reassuring thought of the day, more than half of all deaths occur under medical supervision. What was that oath they take again? What was the name of that? The Hippocratic? More than half of all... Now, of course, that includes all those iatrogenic problems. You know, that's hospital-caused diseases. That's a different subject altogether. But, ladies and gentlemen, let's go beyond the bubble. What do you think? What do you say we go outside the bubble? Outside the bubble. Dateline. Unknown. A confidential report to Army generals in Iraq in December 2003 warned that members of an elite military and CIA task force were abusing detainees, a finding delivered more than a month before Army investigators received the photographs from Abu Ghraib. You know what? I'm going to get back to that whole prisoner story in a moment, but just a tease. Just, you feel teased? Dateline, somewhere else. Pakistan has allegedly started removing checkpoints and releasing arrested tribesmen in South Waziristan, marking an end to its first and highly controversial military campaign along its western border, saying no traces of Osama bin Laden had been discovered. This is this widely touted Pakistan offensive that President Musharraf is in Washington this weekend to receive congratulations for. It's ending. The frontier province governor formally announced the end of the operation on Friday during a meeting with some 400 tribal elders in his official residence in Peshawar. He told the tribal elders that those militants who were apologetic for their misdeeds would be freed. Freed! Or your mattress is freed! However, military spokesman Major General Shokat Sultan said Pakistan Army personnel would not be withdrawn from the area. The military has recently admitted that 202 soldiers died in the area. Military has said its forces killed 302 militants and arrested 600 others. The Peshawar Corps commander said his troops had combed the rugged mountainous area but had not found a single trace of Osama bin Laden's presence. I assure you he could have not escaped my ears and eyes, the commander said. During the entire operation, not a single wanted Al-Qaeda member was arrested or killed. Pakistani President Musharraf said this weekend that the search for Osama bin Laden had gone completely cold, with no recent intelligence indicating where he and his top lieutenants are hiding. That's good work, boys. Musharraf insisted that Pakistani forces are still aggressively pursuing the world's most notorious terrorist. Well, wait a minute. Didn't they just stop? Yes, they did. But you see, this is Dateline Washington. He acknowledged recent security force operations and interrogations have been able to determine only one fact, that bin Laden is still alive. He is alive, but more than that, where he is, no, it'll just be a guess and it won't have much basis, he said in an interview with the Washington Post. Pressed on whether the trail had gone cold, he said, yes, if you mean we don't know from that point of view, we don't know where he is. Well, what other way would the trail have gone cold if not that? What other possible meaning would that have? Oh, it's our fault. He suggested the United States shares major responsibility because the U.S.-led coalition does not have enough troops in Afghanistan, which has left voids. I thought those were prohibited by law. The United States and its allies need to expedite training and expansion of the new Afghan army is the only viable alternative, he said. Pakistani forces are usually not even certain who or what factions they are pursuing in the treacherous tribal regions, Musharraf said. We don't know who we are operating against, and suddenly we find out that, okay, we've got or we've killed so-and-so, sometimes Pakistani. This is good intelligence, boys. The Pakistani leader denied news reports that his troops were withdrawing from South Waziristan. That was the news report I just shared with you. Pakistan instead has ordered a relocation and tactical shift of its forces. Bush has defended Musharraf after the White House talks and said he was very pleased with Pakistan's efforts to fight al-Qaeda. Okay, all right then. I take it all back, whatever it was. But, ladies and gentlemen, that's just to rebut the notion that there are just two sides to every story. Here's the third. Here's the cute, right here. This is from the British newspaper, The Telegraph. Afghan authorities plan to invigorate the country's fledgling tourist industry by developing Osama bin Laden's Tora Bora mountain hideout as a tourist attraction. Dr. Hasamuddin Hamra, the man in charge, believes that the caves which once housed bin Laden and his fighters, together with the remains of mangled Russian tanks and crushed helicopter gunships from the 1980s, will prove a tourist magnet. He said the plan was being undermined by scrap metal merchants from across the border in Pakistan who were taking the wrecked military hardware. The Pakistanis have frustrated our plans, he said. They were coming and buying the metal scrap, so a lot of people took these things to Pakistan. The things we thought existed have been taken away. We have plans to make a tourist site at the Tora Bora Caves, Dr. Hamra said. Many Americans wish to go there. Hands? Keep them up. I'm still counting. Our main problem, he said, is lack of budget, so we're approaching the private sector. We requested that anybody, any company who was interested, should contact us. He added that three Japanese tour company bosses had already visited the site. The complex of caves and bunkers was created during the 1980s as a mountain fortress by the Mujahideen, that is to say, U.S. taxpayers paid for it. That's right. CIA financed the Mujahideen. And it was expanded at bin Laden's expense in the 1990s. Of course, he got his money from Saudi Arabia, so U.S. taxpayers paid for it. It is reported to include barracks, lavish living quarters, and tunnel systems large enough to hide armored vehicles. Bin Laden escaped from Tora Bora and is still at large. The Afghan Civil Aviation and Tourism Ministry believes that the country's notoriety is a strong pull for adventurous tourists. We have a lot of historical places, but Afghanistan is known all over the world because of the war, Dr. Hamra said. With this in mind, the tourism ministry also helps to develop some of the great battlefields of the Soviet occupation as tourist destinations. In the 1960s and 70s, the country was a key stopping point on the hippie trail from Europe to India, famed for its spectacular scenery, ancient ruins, and local intoxicants. But the Russian invasion placed Afghanistan off limits, and for 25 years, it has remained in tourist limbo. Visitors are already returning. Previous editions of the Lonely Planet Guide contained a two-word entry on Afghanistan, quote, don't go, unquote. Since the fall of the Taliban, the Afghan Tourist Board has hosted 35 tour groups, totaling some 247 people, mainly from Europe and Japan. Dr. Hamra dismissed any scaremongering. We have sent groups to the farthest parts of the country. They have come back safely and are saying that the people welcomed them warmly. So we can't find bin Laden. We might not even be looking anymore. But we are going to turn Tora Bora, ladies and gentlemen, into a tourist attraction. Won't you make your plans right about now? And now,
so sorry.
Oh, just got there in time. It's the apologies of the week. Just blame me. I'll take the hit. By the way, welcome to Sirius Satellite Radio back. Speaking of technical problems, welcome back to Sirius Satellite Radio. Simon Malls, excuse me, has apologized and yanked its ad featuring the Statue of Liberty, urging consumers to visit one of its 13 malls in metropolitan New York. The New York Times ad carried the tagline, "Very inspiring, now where's the mall?" Apropos of the Statue of Liberty, you see. The move to pull the ad followed an inquiry why Simon Malls is using a symbol of national freedom to promote shopping. Quote, please understand that we meant no disrespect to this national icon of freedom. It was not our intent to be offensive, rather to promote our centers in a lighthearted manner. Please accept our sincere apologies. Lastly, we have pulled this ad and will not run it again. The principal of Cedar Shoals High School in Athens, Georgia. Why, that's the Athens of Georgia. Apologized this week for reading a poem called The New School Prayer over the school's intercom, which brought complaints from some parents who said it violated the principle of separation of church and state. Tommy Kraft, Principal Tommy Kraft, said he wanted not to promote religion, but to provoke thought and discussion among students about the changing political climate in school, when he read the poem the Tuesday before Thanksgiving. I apologize to them today in another statement, Kraft said. I said there was no attempt to individualize or bring ridicule on any particular person with the poem. The verse, which has circulated on the internet since at least 1992, is written in the rhyming style of the children's prayer that begins, "Now I lay me down to sleep." It refers to prayer not being allowed in school, although students can, quote, dress like freaks and pierce our noses, tongues, and cheeks, or elect a pregnant senior queen, unquote. The poem mentions the ability to get condoms and birth control, as well as study witchcraft, vampires, and totem poles. But the Ten Commandments are not allowed. No word of God must reach this crowd, the poem said. Some parents have complained to both Kraft and the school superintendent. Basically, I found the poem offensive, said one parent, who also objected to misrepresentations in the poem, saying, for example, that students are allowed to wear crosses or other religious items, to wear clothing with religious messages, and to pray in school in some circumstances. Dateline Fukuoka, Japan. A bank that was robbed of 1.5 million yen in November received almost all of the stolen money back after the robber had it delivered with an apology saying, I committed the crime on an impulse, police said. The robbery occurred at the Okagaki branch of the Onga Shinkin Bank. Thank you. On November 25th. Thursday morning, the bank received a delivered parcel containing almost all the money with a note of apology. The note said, quote, every day I regret the fear and trouble I caused for workers. I don't think this will make my crime disappear, but I hope it will make me feel better, unquote. Also in Japan, Education Minister Nariaki Nakayama apologized for applauding the decreases in reference to victims of Japan's wartime aggression in history textbooks. He formerly headed a League of Lawmakers. A League of Lawmakers? Thanks, Tom. Thanks for stopping by. On history education, said his comments reflected his personal views. Since I'm the education minister, I should have refrained from voicing my personal views, he said. He had said last week, it is good that expressions such as comfort women and people forcibly taken from their hometowns to work for Japan have decreased in history textbooks. I am aware now, he says, that such people existed. I would like to deeply apologize and express my feelings of regret to all the people who suffered mental and physical wounds that cannot be healed. Representative Ernest Istook, Republican of Oklahoma, sent a written apology this week to GOP lawmakers whose transportation projects he took out of the giant appropriations bill, retaliating for their endorsement of additional funding for Amtrak. Istook is chairman of the Appropriations Subcommittee on Transportation. He apologized for not communicating better with his colleagues and promised to rectify the situation. Does that mean? No, it doesn't. I hope to keep Amtrak from draining transportation funds from every congressional district, he said. I should have communicated with you better before I treated your request for major additional Amtrak funding as a higher priority than your other projects. I apologize, Istook wrote. Of course, it was Istook's staff member who inserted the controversial provision in that same omnibus bill that would allow any staffer on the Appropriations Committee to go and look at anybody's tax return without a penalty. Even to release the information publicly, the staffer has not apologized. But Istook is apparently off the hook. Is he? Is that the sort of thing a staffer can do without his boss's permission? Question? Canada's Imperial Bank of Commerce already taking heat for accidentally faxing customers' financial information to a U.S. scrapyard. Apologized this week after one of its cash machines dispensed fake money. Hey, it's Canada. How can they tell? Instead of distributing $20 bills, the machine located in the maritime province of New Brunswick spat out colorful bills used as incentives at Canadian Tire Corporation hardware stores. The Canadian Tire money was contained within a bulk of regular currency, and it was apparently loaded into one of our machines, said the spokesman. The bank has refunded the money, issued apologies, and started an investigation into how the incident occurred, he said. Japan not only gives apologies, it receives them. The new chief executive of Citibank Japan apologized at a parliament committee Tuesday and promised that misled customers will be compensated at its private banking unit where regulators have found violations. 14 officers have been fired, including 8 managing directors, for their dubious actions, including inappropriate dealings with customers and lax implementation of internal and Japanese regulations. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, this voicemail message was left last week at the Virginia office of a conservative internet site.
Hi, my name is Rachel, and my telephone number is 215-351-2057. I wanted to tell you that you're evil, horrible people. You're awful people. You represent horrible ideas. God hates you, and he wants to kill your children. You should all burn in hell. Bye.
God hates you, and he wants to kill all your children. Rachel is Rachel Buckman, a reporter with public radio station and Le Show affiliate, WHYY, Philadelphia, for about 3 years. She left her office number, as you heard, on the message. Chris Carmouche, head of the conservative website, questioned her journalistic impartiality by afternoon of the same day. Buckman had resigned and offered apologies, quote, to anyone who I may have personally offended for what she called a mistake. She said she had lost her temper. It was a personal matter that was turned into a public issue, she said. Rather than call my journalistic integrity into question, I decided to resign for personal reasons. The station statement, it is our policy not to discuss the details of personnel issues. Rachel has decided to move forward with her career and her life. Carmouche said, we wish her the best in her future endeavors. It was our hope that the station would simply apologize. She's moving forward, ladies and gentlemen, in her life and her career. As opposed to, how do you move backwards in your life? Rachel, if you have any insight into that, please let us know. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, it is a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Younger than the old lady was when she lost gravitation and I spoke cigars. Well, I look kind of peaked and I feel kind of poor, so for God's sakes, lock that kitchen door.
This is Le Show. Yes, don't act so surprised. Ladies and gentlemen, are you following the convoluted, tremendously complex story of the oil for food scandal, so-called? The oil for food program was set up by the United Nations after sanctions were applied to Saddam Hussein's regime in the wake of the Gulf War. And what it basically, because humanitarians were saying, well, the sanctions applied by the victorious nations in the Gulf War and the United Nations were causing suffering, starving children, you know. So the oil for food program was started by the United Nations to allow Iraq to sell some of its oil, which had been sanctioned. You could not buy Iraqi oil. It was illegal. So there was a system set up where Iraq could sell some oil. The money would go into a UN sort of escrow fund and would be allotted for the purchase of medical and food items for the Iraqi people, especially the children. Well, turns out Saddam Hussein ran a little skimming operation. Gee, imagine that. Guy was crooked. Some estimates range as high as $20 billion. B is in Boston, billion. So you have that. But the allegations go further that to enable Saddam to have his way with the oil for food program, certain people were paid off, certain French, German, Russians, and the son of Kofi Annan, Kojo Annan, who the oil for food program was run through a Swiss organization called Cotecna, and Kojo is on the payroll, it seems, of Cotecna. Now, this was denied for a long time by Kofi, his dad, and came out in the papers, and then it turns out it's money paid to Kojo for after he left Cotecna to pay him not to take a job with another company like Cotecna. Senator Norm Coleman of Minnesota, who's heading a committee looking into all this, called this week for Kofi Annan to resign. Kofi Annan has his own investigator, former Fed Chairman Paul Volcker, looking into this. The conservative wolves are out for Kofi Annan's hide. No love lost between them and the United Nations anyway. But the interesting little twist to the story is that off to the side, other countries, Turkey, Jordan, countries that we like, we're also buying oil from Iraq, not through the oil for food program, just kind of on the sly. And both the Clinton and Bush administrations knew about it and took no steps to stop it. So the whole thing is, shall we say, interesting. But Kofi Annan this weekend could be excused for perhaps having a case of the blues.
I got my Kojo working for himself. After years of schooling and sitting on the shelf, you know he did some fine consulting, just like a Ghibelline or Guelph. He knew some folks in Geneva, knew some people in Baghdad. You know that boy had more connections than Mary Janey's dad. There is no black and white here, just so many shades of plaid. Now Saddam was selling oil, Kojo helped folks buy, Turkey was a customer and Bush did not ask why. George Bush did not ask why. Corruption or just business, it's in the beholder's eye. Now selling oil for food is messy, tough to keep hands clean. My son's got to make a living. You parents, you know what I mean. I've got my Kojo working. He just got caught up in the machine. Getting paid for not competing sounds like a wonderful career. It was good enough for Ovitz. Kojo should be in the clear. I've got my Kojo working, the sweetest sound a dad can hear.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for me to read the trades for you. It's a little thing I do. That's why I do it. This is from Ad Age, the Bible. Are we allowed to say that? Yes, of the advertising industry. New show features brand integration deals. What's this about? I'll read it for you. Don't worry about a thing. Ford Motor Company, Pfizer Consumer Healthcare, and Lowe's Home Improvement are about to become the latest brands stranded on a reality show's desert island. The advertisers have signed deals with cable network TBS to showcase their products on The Real Gilligan's Island, a new reality miniseries that's just debuted. Ford is providing the grand prize in the form of a new 2005 Mustang, although the redesigned car will not appear on the show's island location. Pfizer will feature products such as Listerine Pocket Packs. Lowe's involvement is less obvious, however. TBS suggests the home improvement company will provide building materials for contestants to use as makeshift homes or boats. The concept, their word, for The Real Gilligan's Island came from Mike Fleiss. Any relation? You don't know. He's the executive producer behind The Bachelor and The Bachelorette. Do those count as two ideas? Because The Real Gilligan's Island is TBS's tentpole holiday offering. The three-part series, that's it? Three parts? Mimics the campy original classic TV show, which can still be seen in reruns. Contestants dress up and play the show's characters. Gilligan the Skipper, the Professor, Ginger, Marianne, and the millionaire and his wife. And yet, it's a reality show. According to TBS, the new contestants have to work together to get off the island. Participants will even, quote, relive some of the bizarre scenarios from the classic series. Rich Stoddard, marketing communications director for Ford, described the show as Gilligan's Island meets Survivor. Linda Yaccarino, executive vice president of Turner Advertising Sales, said there's no lack of advertiser interest in the branded entertainment area, but the problem has been matching marketers' plans to those of a cable channel's programming plans. Ouch. In the case of The Real Gilligan's Island, Miss Yaccarino felt the marketers' involvement works, since contestants might be desperate for, say, Pfizer's Skin Cream Lubriderm or a Listerine Pocket Pack if they haven't been able to brush their teeth. Two other unnamed Pfizer products will be featured on the show. Something for erectile dysfunction, perhaps? I'm asking that. That's not in the article. Similar placements by companies such as General Motors, Ford, Target, Frito-Lay, and Home Depot, among others, proved popular among advertisers who opted to integrate their products into Survivor. Separately, TBS is employing an increasingly common video-on-demand element to promotion of the reality show. Ford is sponsoring a Real Gilligan's Island video-on-demand package that will include a 60-second ad that shows a digitally reincarnated Steve McQueen stepping into Ford's new Mustang. Reality, ladies and gentlemen, it's an elastic concept. You realize that when I read the trades for you. Yes, it is a copyrighted feature. Don't ask. So, ladies and gentlemen, get back to this prisoner deal. This confidential report to Army generals in Iraq warned a year ago that detainees were being abused. The report, which was not released publicly and was recently obtained by the Washington Post, concluded some U.S. arrest and detention procedures at the time could technically be illegal. It also said coalition fighters could be feeding the Iraqi insurgency by making gratuitous enemies as they conducted sweeps, netting hundreds of detainees who probably did not belong in prison, and holding them for months at a time. This was Colonel Stuart Harrington, retired, found that members of Task Force 121, a joint special ops and CIA mission, searching for weapons of mass destruction, had been abusing detainees throughout Iraq and had been using a secret interrogation facility to hide their activities. And a recent classified assessment of U.S. military detention facilities in Afghanistan found they have been plagued by many of the problems that existed at military prisons in Iraq, including weak or non-existent guidance for interrogators, creating what the assessment described as a, quote, opportunity for prisoner abuse. Now, among the less harsh methods being used, apparently both in Afghanistan and Iraq, it's harsh enough, placing prisoners in shackling them hand and foot, placing them in a sitting position where they can't move, then turning the air conditioning impossibly cold, and then bombarding them, the detainees, with very, very loud rap music. This is believed to encourage interrogation. But like everything else, there's a law of unintended consequences.
Second Detainee Abuse Division Audio Harassment Brigade. Our mission is submission. Lieutenant KJ speaking. How can I help you today?
Hello. Can I speak to General Bland? This is Arthurine Kovacs from BMI.
Ballistic Missile Installation?
Broadcast Music Incorporated.
I'm sorry. The general is giving a deposition. Can I manage your call?
Well, this is a non-routine version of a routine inquiry. It's come to our attention that your facility is playing large numbers of BMI-licensed recordings, including but not limited to In Your Face by Booty Man and Pimp This Bitch by Gangsta Fella. And we have no record of your facility being a signatory.
No, ma'am, that's correct, ma'am. We have a memo from the Council to the President saying we do not have to behave as if we are a signatory, being that we are a clandestine top command.
I'm not talking about the Geneva Convention, sir. I'm talking about the Master BMI Licensing Agreement. You are playing this music, correct?
To the best of my information, ma'am, yes, ma'am.
Well,
we are, although I'm not authorized to confirm that officially, that that would have to come from
General Bland. I understand that.
Yes, ma'am.
My point is that the music is being played in a semi-public place.
Well, there are clients in that area, yes, ma'am.
Clients?
Yes, ma'am. Detainee-type clients. There are also employees of the facility who are there to monitor the effects of the music infliction on the clients, but I would not describe it as a public place.
My information is that these copyrighted songs are being played at very loud volume.
That is correct, ma'am. Yes, sir. That's as per procedure authorized by somebody other than myself or anyone above me.
So that anyone walking by your facility could hear the music.
Theoretically, if they were not shot for being inside the security perimeter, that is true. Yes, ma'am.
Well, this is a non-conforming use. There are royalty payments that are due us on behalf of the writers of this music. Your facility, sir, is out of compliance.
Yes, ma'am. I'm given to understand that that is the nature of the facility, is non-compliance on the part of both our clients and in response of ourselves.
Let me put it this way, Lieutenant. What if all the bars and all the radio stations and all the concert halls in the United States behaved the way you do?
There'd be a lot fewer riots, ma'am.
I'm asking you to consider the effect on the artist.
Mm-hmm.
Would you sit down and write Pimp This Bitch if you had no hope of receiving compensation for its performance?
Me personally, ma'am, I wouldn't be writing something by that title. I'm Church of the Nazarene people.
All right, look.
Excuse me, ma'am. I'm the only one here who's authorized to use the telephone. I need to take this other call. Second Detainee Abuse Division Audio Harassment Brigade. Our mission is submission. Lieutenant KJ speaking. How can I help you today?
Yeah, who is this? General David Bland?
No, sir. This is Lieutenant KJ.
DJ. Yeah, well, you're just...
KJ, sir.
Well, that's close enough. Look, I'm Doug Trent. You've probably heard of me. Everybody in the industry calls me Dirty Dougie. They're just jealous because I actually get product played. The rest of them just, you know, pocket the money and BS the charts. And I'm calling to find out if you got the new stuff from Dead Meat Records.
New stuff, sir? Query that.
Yeah, product, units, records. We shipped you Talk to the Fist by Killzilla and Dogface Sisters by the Krunken Crew. I was just calling to find out if you've auditioned them, and if so, when you're adding them to the rotation. You don't want to be the last detainee harassment unit in the friggin' planet to get on these, because they are...
Sir?
Hold on, I'm on a roll here. They are very hard pieces of hip-hop business, very maxed-out beats, very wised-up rhymes. Be great for your situation.
Sir, I'm not authorized to select the music that's utilized at our facility.
Always with the runaround. Okay, who is?
I'm not authorized to know that, sir.
Look, what are you again, Lieutenant?
Yes,
Lieutenant,
sir.
This is important to me. I need some ads. I haven't had major market ads since Biggie Smalls passed. A facility like yours, that's incredible street cred for these records.
Sir, this is a high-security detainee detention facility.
There's no better street cred than that, dude. Look, what do you like, soldier? Cristal, coke, hookers? Name your poison. They don't call me Dirty Dougie for nothing. Truth is, I pay him to do it. So, what's your pleasure?
Wednesday evening Bible reading, sir?
Okay, me too. I was kidding. I respect that. I'm a man of the cloth myself. Not literally, but, you know, I was going to study for the priesthood, but I just didn't like little boys. I'm kidding. Look, Lieutenant.
Yes, sir.
Give me a break here. I'm dying with these stiffs here.
Sure, all due respect, sir, but we have a mission to perform here that's vital to the security of the nation.
Yeah, and I got two ex-wives and a Bentley to support. We are all in this together.
I left someone on hold, sir.
Oh, please, I say that to my bookie, don't.
Are you still there, ma'am?
Yes, I am, and I heard one of our songs while I was on hold. You know, we expect our government to be supporting artists' rights, not joining the pirates.
Ma'am, I'm going to have to bump this up to the general.
Well, I would advise you to do just that, because we are lawyered up like you wouldn't believe.
Yes, ma'am, but I will tell you this, ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
Calls like this make me think that torturing foreign detainees in the name of national security might just be more trouble than it's worth. And that's a mission-threatening thought.
Well, but you...
Goodbye, ma'am.
Viração da longa espera. Vem, como se fosse uma aflição. Vem, e a alegria prolifera. Vamos no trem, descarrilhando da rota normal. Todos acenam e acende a emoção. Quase esquecemos na beira dos trilhos nosso coração. Quem alimentou-se do silêncio tem os olhos cheios de canções. Vem como quem vai vingar o tempo. Vamos no trem rasgar o monstro de papel de seda, varrer as bruxas, diabos, dragões, reocupando essa grande alameda, nosso coração. Bota lenha, atiça, caldeira, vamos lá, cada um com a sua paixão. Bota lenha, atiça, caldeira, vamos lá, tá na hora do trem se espalhar. Cada um que tome o seu lugar, e enquanto houver lenha, a festa não vai acabar. Bota lenha, atiça, caldeira, vamos lá, cada um com a sua paixão. Bota lenha, atiça, caldeira, vamos lá, tá na hora do trem se espalhar. Cada um que tome o seu lugar, e enquanto houver lenha, a festa não vai acabar.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world to the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, around the world via your computer at two different locations, live and archived, whenever you want it, KCRW.com and HarryShearer.com. Available as a free download at audible.com/theshow and on the PRI channel of Sirius Satellite Radio. Yeah, me and Howard Stern, except I'm already there. And it would be just like the train whistles and the boat whistles getting along. If you'd agree, being in perfect harmony if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? Alrighty. Thank you very much. Email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack, a tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks. Le Show playlists are available at harryshearer.com, and that's the same place where you can go to sign up for our occasional low-impact email newsletter. And another tip of the Le Show chapeau to Bob Dunn here at WWL-TV New Orleans for making today's broadcast downright insegrevious. Next week, we begin the year in rebuke from here in New Orleans. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world, now more than ever, as the home of the homeless.